We will need someone who is posted at the door to close it because we need our concentration. Ladies and only one lady and a lot of gentlemen, Hare Krishna. I'm very happy to be here with you this evening. As I was introduced, my name is Sachinandan Swami. I'm giving lectures in universities in Germany. This is my specialty. I have been doing this for maybe 20 years and then met so many contacts of people who are interested to find spiritual solutions to the material, to the problems in science. They were so interested that a few lectures wouldn't do any longer. So we decided to found a center which became known in Europe as the Center for Vedic Studies. The Center for Vedic Studies mainly translated books from the ancient Vedic scriptures into the German language, and organized lecture tours all over Germany. We found out after maybe a work of 10 years that we wanted to make a forum in which not only we monks could present Vedic knowledge, but we wanted to have a forum in which also science, scientific worldviews, the mechanistic or non-spiritual scientists would be able to present their theories, and then we would compare them with Vedic knowledge. So we started with the Center for Vedic Study, which was more or less an in-house thing, and then made it broader and widened it into the Veda Academy, which has now many scientists working with it. Members of the Veda Academy have given lectures which the former Chancellor of Germany, Helmut Kohl, attended and became quite well known. Fine, so this is my work today. I have Gopinath has forgotten the lecture title, but it is, I've written it down, The Psychology of the Self. In this lecture, I will talk about the multidimensional human being. I will talk about the philosophy of Sigmund Freud. You are all engineers. Do you at all know psychology and psychological figures? Sigmund Freud, you have heard this name. Maybe you have heard it in an English way, Freud or something. I only speak it in the German way. And I didn't know that you are all from the engineer field. I have prepared some psychology. Is psychology at all interesting for you? It's supposed to move the human being. Let us hear. You will see what I present, and then I have finally given a few, let me say, interesting points. So, all right. This is here. We wanted to have an overhead projector, but because of the shift of rooms, that is not available. But I will manage like this. Let me start to talk about the self, our being, our essence. that which always accompanies us through our journey through life. According to the Vedic scriptures, we actually have three selves. Our first self is our body, that which is visible when you look in the mirror, that which is visible to other people. The second self is called our mind, the intelligence, and also our concept of identity, the ego. And the last concept of self, according to the Vedic understanding, is Atma. To make it very clear, I will draw you a little schematic thing. Body, inside it, what psychology is mostly concerned about, we can call it the subtle body. Made of mind, intellect, and sense of identity. We can call it ID or ego. Now within this, according to the Vedic understanding, is the Atma. The Veda calls the gross body the Linga Sharira and the subtle body, the Veda calls the gross body the Stool Sharira and the subtle body the Linga Sharira, and the self is called the Atma. All these three dimensions of the personality are what you can call in Vedic language Atma. Sometimes Atma refers to the body, sometimes to the mind and intellect and ego, and sometimes to the soul. We have three selves, so to say. Each one of us has three particular selves. Now, this is Vedic philosophy, and I think you have heard it many times. I want to now make it a little bit more interesting and a little bit more workable for all of you. I will ask my assistant Shrishti Carter to please take this away. All human beings operate on five levels of consciousness, and I will quickly present these levels of consciousness to you, because I find it very useful to know these five levels in order to live a satisfying life. The first level is in the Vedic knowledge called Anamaya. A person on this level of consciousness thinks truth is food. The baby, for instance, is not worried who is the president of India. All the baby really thinks about is the milk from his mother's breast. The baby is so much identified with the body, and truth means for him eating or drinking. Who of you likes to smoke? Psychologists have analyzed this need to put the cigarette in the mouth as a suppressed need of the which comes from our baby times, when we like to put the breast nipple of our mother in our mouth and then feel that the world is in order. And this level of consciousness is the first level called Anamaya, and it is not over, as we have just seen, when we grow up from childhood to being grown up. Many people nowadays think that the purpose of life is really to work hard so that they can eat something nice and drink. The Germans are well known for this all over the world. They may work and develop high theories, but in the evening they all meet in the Gasthaus. That's a German word, it means like a hotel or a pub, and then they eat and drink. It's a I have an auntie who is still on this level of consciousness, Anamaya. When she is dissatisfied, she goes in the night into the refrigerator and eats a lot. She doesn't go in the refrigerator, she opens the refrigerator and eats a lot. On this level, truth is food. The identification of such a person is the body. And let me make it very simple. He thinks, I am because I eat. Haribol. I will ask Shishtikata to write down this Anamaya. Now, if a person develops and comes to the second level of consciousness, he goes to what is called Pranamaya. A person here begins to identify with his activities. If you ask him, who are you? He will say, a musician or an engineer or a professor. It's not that, let me say, he is identical with these external activities, but he identifies with them. He's on what we call in philosophy the level of pranamaya. Prana are the life symptoms, or we could extend it into activities. The next level of consciousness is clear. On this level, a person's worldview is, I am because I act. Or I am what I act. He is also still identified with the first Atma, or concept of Atma, the material body, the gross body. As a person advances in his or her life, he or she comes to the next level of consciousness, which is called Jnana Maya. Jnana means, of course, knowledge. Here a person is no longer so much concerned with food and with activities, but with ideas and concepts. Personally, I believe that many of you students who work very hard on the intellectual, or on the knowledge field, the field of accumulating information, are on this level of consciousness, Jnanamaya. Such a person begins to identify himself with his mind and with his intellect. He doesn't really always care how good he or she looks, as long as the mind is strong. And you have the slogan here at the university, knowledge is power. That is the interest of such a person. He might describe himself in such terms: I am because I think. European philosophy in the medieval times came to this level. They developed the sentence cogito ergo sum. I don't know if you have studied Latin. You know Latin? Latin is what is believed. Oops. A little entangled here. One moment. Latin is what is believed to be the father of European languages. Now we have some more guests. Please, somehow we need to make them comfortable. There's one seat. Here is another seat. We can. You're comfortable, Gopinath? You are our organizer. Let us give a seat for Gopinath. Because it will be a little strenuous what I have to say. Please. Latin is believed to be the origin of European languages. Some research workers in languages have tried to establish that it comes from Sanskrit. This is disputed. Some think yes, some say no. And it's the intellectual language, so to say. Cogito, oops. Ergo sum. If you know this, then everyone will applaud you. Cogito means I think, ergo means that's why, sum means I am. I think because I am. This is the highest. No, we can't say it like this, but this is a level of European philosophy which has impressed a lot of the thinking world at that time and continues to do this still. So a person, it responds to Jnanamaya, I am because I think. It's just turned around. These are three levels of consciousness on which the human being operates, and they are based on the three, on two types of identification. The first two, I am because I eat, and I am because I act, are based on the identification with the gross material body. The concept of Jnanamaya, I am because I think, is based on the identification with the subtle material body. I'm sorry, this first part is a little theoretical, but we will soon see land on the horizon and it will become more practical. Now, who of you is interested in self-realization? Some of you are. Good. You might say, well, why is Sachinandan Swami asking this question? I mean, we are in India, the land of self-realization, and we came to this lecture. Let me tell you, I went up the Kulachatri mountain near Kulur, and many Indian students came up that mountain, and I said, why did you come here? Why do you take the burden to go this mountain? Is it for spiritual reasons? And they say, no. For the view. I was a little bit, let me say, I was a little naive. I thought everyone is into self-realization who goes up such a mountain, but now there's a widespread development of materialism in India, so that this question is justified. Who is interested in self-realization? Now, the Indian philosophy takes us from through these three levels of consciousness, Anamaya, Pranamaya, Jnanamaya, but then it brings us to the next level of consciousness, the next highest level of consciousness, which is called Vijnanamaya. On this level of consciousness, someone wants to find out what is the self as being different from the gross body and from the material, from the subtle body. Have you ever stood before a mirror and looked into your image and asked yourself the question, am I really this person who's standing there in the mirror? If you have not done this, and you are a little courageous by nature and a little interested in experiments, please, one morning when you don't have to catch the bus to get to the university, just look at your image in the mirror and ask yourself the question, am I that? After maybe 1 minute of looking, you will start to have an experience which many people who have done this experiment have. They will begin to understand, no, this is my body. The body which I dress and which I'm taking care of by feeding it and by bathing it regularly, that body is just a covering of myself. I am different from this arrangement of skin and blood and lungs and so on and so forth. This is an experiment which you can make. Another experiment which can tell you that you cannot be the gross body is an experiment which tells you how you are not the subtle body. Are you ready for an experiment here in psychology? You're not afraid? Yes? I need something to make a sound. Maybe this. I will give all of you a job to think about. Yes? When I make this sound, the experiment starts. And you have to follow exactly what I say. Otherwise it doesn't work. It will be a harmless experiment. Nothing will happen to you. You will be the same person with the same moral integrity as you were when you started the experiment. And when I make like this, it means the experiment is closed. Now for this experiment, we need to sit straight. Thank you. Look at this. Can you all see it? Why did you come late?
I got a time coming directly to my university exams.
Achha. I think for this experiment, Shishtikata needs to stand before the door, because if someone comes in the door, everyone will look, who is it? Just tell them, in 2 minutes they can come in. So I will need to start again. We are just making an experiment on psychology. You are one of our candidates. We will see the work. We will try to establish how we are not the mind. I will give you a task to think about, and then when I will make this sound, you will be left on your own. When I make this sound, the experiment has finished. So we start again. Please look all at this object. It's very important that you look very closely. Do not name it as of yet. Just look. How is its shape? Is there a certain color? What are these things? The individual things? Huh? And what is it when they all come together? Now close your eyes. I will give you now something to experiment as an order which you please follow. Please do not think of the garland. Do absolutely not think of this garland. Thank you. You can open your eyes. I hope you didn't expect more. That is all. Now comes my question. What did you think about? We look for honest answers.
Object with some white span, green stalks, mass arranged in a succession.
Yeah.
And each of the flowers have.
You were thinking of flowers. What else? You are shocked by my presentation. Most of the people I've done this experiment with have said, I was thinking of the garland. I do not know, because my style of presentation may be different from your professors and from what you have expected, that I have seen when I speak in different countries which are not German, in a language which is not German also, that my audience is sometimes a little bit shocked by my style and presentation, because they thought a monk would speak differently. But most of the people, when I'm telling them, don't think of the garland, immediately think of the garland. They cannot think of something else, because it's so prominent in their mind. Sometimes they think, what is this experiment? Who is this person telling us so confident what to do and what not to do? But when they really get into the experiment, they begin to understand they cannot control their mind. Their mind controls them. They cannot tell the mind what to do. The mind tells them what to do. I often say to the Germans, if you think you are so powerful, then tell your mind what to think of for the next 2 minutes. You will see your mind tells you what to think about. So a person who is a little, let me say, deep in his life, will understand that there is this mind. I'm telling this mind what to do, that the mind roams around and tells and does something different than what I'm telling it to do. This shows me that I cannot be the mind, but the mind is some external object, something which does something to me. A person who is trying to find out the deepest concept of self, of Atma, in this, he begins to meditate and think about this question, who am I? I cannot be this material body. This material body is a machine which I'm using, just like I use a car. This person thinks, I cannot be the mind, because the mind wanders. Thoughts come in like trains which come in the train station and leave again, like trains who leave a train station. I must be something else. A person on this level we call it Vijnana Maya, wants to not just operate in the field of the mind, like the person on the Jnana Maya level. He is not satisfied by working on the field of the body. But he is a spiritual scientist, we could say, who wants to find out his spiritual nature, who wants to find out Atma in the deepest sense of the term. He thinks, I am because I am. Now, the last concept, or the last level of consciousness, is what we call in Sanskrit Anandamaya. Anandamaya is a level of consciousness which a person understands who sees that he is a part of the Lord, of God. If you would find this object on the street, you would most probably not know what it is. I mean, it could be a new device to keep paisa. It could be some demonstration thing for the biology department of the university to show that spiders make a cocoon in which they allure their victims. I do not want to shock you with my Western fantasy. It could be so many things. The moment you see this on the microphone, you understand that this is to make the sound better. It filters the sound in some way. In other words, you can understand an object if you understand of what it is part. In the same way, on the highest level of consciousness called Anandamaya, you can understand yourself if you ask the question of what or of whom am I a part. If you would ask a person on this level of consciousness, who are you? He says, I am a part and parcel of the Supreme, of Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, this was my little Vedic part. I want to summarize a little bit, because now after I have explained this part, I will go into Western understandings of psychology, which are helpful for our life and so on. But I wanted to first establish an understanding of the self from my own spiritual tradition, the Vedic tradition. Let me summarize. Self or Atma can mean three different things. According really to the level of consciousness, it can mean the body, the mind and intellect, or the soul. Now, according to the level of consciousness, a person will identify Atma or Self with one of the three ideas. If a person is on the lowest level, the level which the babies start with, he is identified with the body. For him, life is in order if there is fruit. He has reached the truth. No longer any need to think or probe further. For a person who comes on the second level, Pranamaya, he identifies with the activities and is also still identified with the gross body. A person who gets higher in his level begins to understand self to be the mind. He is the thinker. Knowledge is power. For him this is the most important thing. For him this is truth. And a person who still goes higher, he tries to find out the soul. He is the yogi who goes onto the Vijnana Maya. However, the highest understanding, according to the ancient Vedic tradition of self, is to understand the soul to be a part and parcel of the Supreme, a level which is called Anandamaya. I want to thank you very much for your attention up to here. We can do now one of two things. We could, yes, I think what we should do is I should see if there are any questions up to here. We need this, what I'm doing at the moment is I'm trying to supply you with a model to think of, a model which explains the concept of self, because if we go further into psychology, we need to have some working model. What I have explained so far, let me... I would like to make a demarcation line here. It's all right. Up till here is what materialists, material scientists scientific understanding they can work with this idea. This two concepts are spiritual. Material scientists have not always reached to this. I think it is important to say where we are standing. Do you have any questions so far? A little pause. After the pause, I will invite one scientist who is waiting outside, a Nobel laureate. He will speak for some time and then I will attack his concepts. It is not so difficult to understand, isn't it? If you have no question, because we need a little pause, I will read you from the Upanishad a very nice illustration of what I have said about the soul as being different from the gross body and the subtle body. I think you will enjoy it very much. Please listen to these verses with this new systematic understanding. Atmanam ratinam vidi Shariram ratamevacha Buddhim tu saratim vidi Mana pragrahamevacha. Beautiful. It describes the soul as the rider in the chariot of the body. The jiva or spirit soul is like someone seated upon a rat or a chariot. The body is the chariot itself. The intelligence is the driver. And the mind is the reins. Indriyani hayanahu Vishayam steshu gocharan Atmendriya manoyuktam Proktityahu manishinaha. A wise man knows the senses to be the horses of this rat, chariot, and the sense objects are the road on which they run, the spirit soul, Atma, bound to the senses by the mind, experiences both happiness and sorrow. Imagine the soul on a chariot, the chariot of the body. The senses are the road. They are very, it's very attractive. Here is form, here is smell, here is this and here is that, and he drives. Yastvadina varan pavati ayoktena manasada tasyendriya navasyani dushtashvai vasarate. One who is without discrimination is like a person who has lost the reins. His senses are uncontrollable, like a driver's ill-behaved steeds. Have you ever seen a chariot where the horses run wild? In Vienna, the town of Mozart, you can see these ancient chariots that tourists go on. And sometimes the horses turn wild when there's too much loud music and take the chariot all over. This is the situation which a materialist finds himself. The senses become so attracted to music and to sex life that a person runs wild all over. And I will just go to the translations. But one who possesses wisdom, born of experience, whose mind is always held in rein, has subdued his senses like a driver's well-trained horses. Beautiful, isn't it? When you have control over your mind, which are like the reins, you can control your senses and go in a direction which is helpful. But if the mind and the senses are uncontrolled, they will drag you wherever they bring you. For one who possesses realized knowledge of the Absolute as his chariot driver, and who takes his mind in rein, he reaches the limit of the road of material bondage and attains the supreme destination, the abode of Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such a person is on the level of Anandamaya, where he will get real transcendental pleasure. But he who is uncontrolled, who is a stupid fool, still lingering on the material plane, where he only knows the self to be material or to be of subtle matter, is not in control and will be dragged around like the people in modern history. Bill Clinton, the leader of a nation, is found to be in the most embarrassing situation because he lacked sense and mind control. Bill Clinton has no knowledge of the spiritual self and therefore does not taste
ananda or spiritual pleasure. Therefore he repeatedly goes, although he is married, for sense gratification, and violates moral principles, and is for the nation to explain his newest adventure in sexual adventure. So it's important to understand the self to be spiritual and part and parcel of God, because otherwise it will not be possible to control the mind and the senses, who will bring you everywhere in life, even to dangerous places. So I will now, this problem of not being able
to control the mind and the senses is a problem which very often psychologists have confronted with. They have seen that human beings over the history have done many things because they couldn't control the mind and the senses. Wars, for instance, are products of egos, of politicians. There's so much abuse, both sexually, alcoholic abuse and nicotine abuse. Even in we have in Germany the problem in schools and universities are now very much aggravated because people have no spiritual level from which they can control the mind and senses. According to investigation, the problems in the universities and schools are now rape, that's the first thing, and crime, that means violence even towards pupils. Violence in the schools is a serious problem, and other such nasty things, which I do not want to say because then my presentation would become sensational and lose its intellectual value. 10 years ago, the main complaint was shouting in the corridors, and then littering, that means sticking chewing gum under the table. That was a big problem in my school times, and you know, not welcome to a power cut. I will be able to manage even in the darkness. Please don't become diverted. You are in India. This is natural. So this was the main. So fast. A generator. Acha. Staying near the Kulachatri mountain, and I gave up everything of Western comfort. The most difficult for me was really the light thing, because I'm used to work till late in the night, and with the candle and the kerosene lamp it doesn't just go so well, because we need a lot of light to do hard work on this. So, but I think someone who wants to achieve much in his life needs to sometimes do austerity to become a little bit independent of comforts and of things. Especially people who are monks need to do this. So anyways, I wanted to give a little illustration for my point that when spiritual knowledge goes away and people only become identified with the body and the senses, then they do not have sense control and no mind control, and a lot of problems are the result. Sigmund Freud, the father of psychology, used to deal with this, and I would like to invite him to come and give now a little presentation about his psychology, philosophy. I will not comment it from my understanding in the beginning, but I will give him a fair chance to understand, to present his materialistic picture of the self, and then I will show a little bit the problems which he could not solve, which I think can be solved with this model, which is ultimately a spiritual model. Now what Sigmund Freud will explain to you is common knowledge in psychology. I will not waste your time with the theories which have been shown as wrong. This model which I'm now presenting is a model a different model. You will need to write, Siegmund, may I just ask you, you do not know this name, Sigmund Freud, of Freudian psychology? It's so well known. I mean, the home table, you will speak about it. Yes. Maybe because I speak it like it from in my German language, German Basia. It is not. It did not ring familiar. His name is. I can't get up because of this thing. So you have to do all the writing. Write him down, please. Dr. Sigmund Freud. Yes. He said that the human being has three levels. The first is what he called the S. These are the clinical words. It's interesting to learn new things. S. It's a German word. He spoke German. S, to be translated, means something like it, the it. With the it, he was referring to the subconsciousness. Yeah. I'm sorry, you need to write here. That. Yeah. Yeah, the schreib is hier hin. This is the German bus, yeah, we are speaking in. Yeah. The S, yeah. Yes, this is the subconsciousness. Then comes the Ich. Do you know, any one of you knows German? No. It is not a good language. No need to. Ich means the I, something like the I. And then I will explain these three terminologies because they are very interesting. The super I, the Über Ich, he said. Super I. It. Let me explain the three terms to you. This is not good technology. A person has to walk freely in life. This is what we can call the realm of the subconsciousness, where the impressions are from your childhood. For instance, maybe your father beat you when you were a little child, and therefore authority figures strike terror in your mind. In this area, there are all the suppressed desires. I have heard that the dream of the Indian cinema goer is to finally see some undressed lady in cinema. It's only a matter of time when it comes. It's the desires which are in the subconsciousness, which maybe no one wants to admit to because they are so. Then comes the Über Ich, this realm, this is the teachings which society gives you, the do's and don'ts, which sometimes make a pressure on the subconsciousness. Subconsciously, maybe you want to become a sportsman and really show the cricketers what you can do. That may be a deep urge in you, or you may like to be an artist or a musician, But society tells you, no, you must become an engineer. Father tells you, this is how to make money. So very often Sigmund Freud analyzed, there is the urge from the irrational urge from the subconsciousness, the things which we would like to do really, but then comes society and offers or your reason, the things which you have accepted to be better, and offers a strong pressure on it. Don't we all sometimes feel like this? We want to do something, but then, for instance, when there now is examination time, you came in late because of this and because you were loitering a little around. But you might from inside, you might really, I don't want this nonsense examinations. I want to swim in the ocean of Udupi. So there are the two forces. The irrational things, and then that which comes from the ratio, rational. And very often they are in conflict, and they make, and they build up your personality.
Let me sit.
Which is the neurotic human being of today? I'm speaking like Sigmund Freud speaks. I'm no longer the Swami from Germany. I'm giving you a fair presentation. All of you, dear students, especially from Asiatic countries, where you have religion and other social restraints, are neurotic because of this. You want to do something, but society gives you a certain understanding into the ratio, and your personality therefore is highly problematic. Sigmund Freud speaks. I will attack him in a minute. Don't worry, I'm on your side. Because he attacks also my foundations and so on. Ladies and gentlemen, if I were to explain my picture of the human being, Sigmund Freud is speaking, not Satchidananda Swami, I want to give you an analogy. Imagine I'm giving this lecture and there are some ruffians out in the corridor who violently demand entrance. We want to also be here. But they really only want to disturb. At this moment, my friends who are close to me would go to the door and block its entrance so that they would not be able to disturb. However, they would go in the university, the ruffians, and say, there is a program we can disturb. Let us just get more people to come. And after some time, the pressure on the door would become so intense that they would violently break into this lecture, and there would be no question, even of the most well-intentioned listeners, to concentrate any longer. This is what happens in every human being. From the subconsciousness, our desires come. They demand entrance into our lives. But my ratio, that which I have trained, which I have learned from society and from the moral conduct, from religions and the conventions, are pressuring against it. Ultimately, what will happen is that these drives from my subconsciousness will come and will violently disturb my personality. This is how Sigmund Freud explains his philosophy, what do you think about it? It's interesting to think about it. It's sometimes right. Many people are in a pressure cooker, their personalities. Many times also, I do not know if in India we have this, it's called eye diagnosis in medicine. You go and I'm asking, what?
Endoscope.
Yeah, it's almost like a microscope which goes into the eye, and you can see if they are in the pupilla, not pupilla, but it's the iris,
the globe of the eye.
Yeah, in the globe of the eye, when there are some irregularities, you can say, well, his stomach is not working well, or maybe the liver has a problem, and so on. You know this diagnosis? Yeah, it's a commonly accepted. Very often it has been seen if doctors who are expert in this diagnosis look into people, they see, look into the eyes of people, they see inside in the, I only know the German word, iris. Now we have no subconscious any longer.
This is the eye, huh? And there's this. Then there's the black pupil.
This is not a beautiful eye.
And this is called...
Iris.
What is it called?
Iris.
Iris. Yeah, iris. Yes, iris. When you look inside this, there is a flickering, it's moving. And especially it's moving with people who are not in harmony with themselves, who have a problem with their wives, who have a problem in their lives, they're not properly situated. So many these flickerings come due to personal tensions. And Sigmund Freud says, everyone, especially in this modern society where there are so many rules to learn for the game, lives in the constant tension because his subconsciousness is constantly sending signals which are suppressed. And I think if you don't have to now speak, but look into your lives. Are there also areas where you are in conflict? I think every human being would say, yes, yes, yes. In our movement, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, I want to tell you, we demand of the monks, the brahmacharis, to follow the law of celibacy. Do you know this word, celibacy? And sometimes the young people are not, they have really problems to follow this because they come from a different background, especially Westerners who do not have the upbringing. Well, in India also now it has changed, but they might have had 20 relationships already, and then all of a sudden it is demanded from them to live celibacy in celibacy, and it is problematic for them, and tensions come out of this. You all are students. You have to sometimes listen to professors, and the only thing you really think is, I would like to take a cake. And I would go with this cake and put it into his face. But instead I have to listen to this. And then you have your Indian words, how you describe the professor in private. But you can't do this. Because
but what the other students say, and you may not get the right notes and so on, and you live in tension. And when maybe this professor comes and says to you, "Hello, how are you?" You go like, and you do what is called a Fehlleistung, some mistake in your life. It's not good to live in tension because you will make mistakes. I remember my father once told me, my father is, in his life he came very high in profession. He became the director of the German railway, but it was a long and arduous climb up, and he hated his one chief, but he had to always say, "You are very intelligent and your decisions are extremely wise." Now one day he had to give a lecture about the German railway before the press, and then he had to describe his chief. Now, because he lived in so much tension about him, he did a mistake which you always do when you live in tension. He said, "This chief is the most foolish idiot on planet Earth." He wanted to say, "This chief is the greatest achiever on planet Earth." But because he was always in the tension, he did this mistake, which everyone does who is in this problem. So Sigmund Freud says, well, the only way to deal with this problem is to give in to your desires one by one. If you stop them, if you put the lid on the pressure cooker, one day it will be, it will explode. He would say, well, if there are ruffians out in the corridor, instead of trying to block the door so that finally they just break in and disturb everything, you let them come in one by one. Deal with them individually. Don't suppress anything. By the way, this philosophy is now also being spread in the Asiatic countries, everywhere. Deal with your desires. Be a man. Be a woman. Enjoy yourself. Don't give any lid to it. Don't suppress it. So this was Sigmund Freud. I will now end my class and my presentation by giving you a spiritual alternative which we derive from our little shemata which we have given in the beginning. As I said in the beginning of the class, I do not want the class to be only theoretical. I want to give also, how do you say, some spiritual solutions which you can work with in your life, which will be helpful. I wanted to bring Sigmund Freud in our classroom, so to say, because he addresses what I feel is a very important point, that is how we deal with our desires. Sigmund Freud has said, well, we have to fulfill them one by one, because if we don't do it, we will become neurotic and there will be an explosion and we will make mistakes in our lives. Now, in the Bhagavad Gita, let me just see. Just for your information, I want to make here a little pause. I have prepared many other subjects, but I feel it will go too late, so I will cut my lecture. I will cut the other points. C.G. Jung and his theory of the superconsciousness. I can't do this for time reasons. And I want to come to a close, really. Let me just see. Yes. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna addresses this point. He says, even a wise man is forced to act according to his nature. What good can suppression do? Here, Krishna explains almost in the same way which Sigmund Freud has explained, that suppression of our desires will not do us any good. But then Krishna comes to another conclusion. He says, someone who follows the road of the senses lives in danger, because if you do not curb lust or karma, the Sanskrit word is karma, in the very beginning, it will create a lot of problem for you, because it is the all-devouring enemy of the world. And Krishna reasons, Lord Krishna reasons, he says, karma is like a fire. If you pour a little ghee on it, it will not stop demanding, but it will demand more and more. You know from your own experiences, if you fulfill material desires, like sexual desires, you have done it, but then you are not satisfied, you want to have more of this. Or if you build a house, you have earned enough rupees, you will not be satisfied with the house, you will want to have more and more of the things. It is described that every material desire, when you fulfill it, gives birth to a new one. Wait a minute. We have brought some prasadam from our temple. You should not go without taking this. It is spiritual food which will help you. I know some of you. It will take only 5 more minutes. No, you have to go. You please go, but take prasadam with you and eat it on the corridor so that you do not, that we can concentrate more. Let me give you the example. If I light a fire here and the fire starts burning and burning, and I say to the fire, fire, be satisfied with this 1 square meter. This much I can give you without making too much of a scandal in the University of Udupi. Will the fire be satisfied with this? Yeah. Is there any problem to do it fast? I would say let me finish, because if you do for everyone, they will all look toward the pot. I know this. Just two for the two people who have to go. Mm-hmm. Please take your prasadam and then... Have a good night. Hare Krishna. Goodbye. So, the problem of fulfilling material desires one by one is that they will never be satisfied. Karma or material lust cannot be satisfied one by one by one, because it's like a fire. If you light a fire, it will take more and more and more. So Krishna gives another process in the Bhagavad Gita. He says that if you come to the spiritual platform of Ananda Maya, that is linking up with the Supreme, you will get so much spiritual pleasure that you will not become diverted to the demands of the senses and the mind. When the Atma is fully satisfied in yoga with the Supreme, it will experience ananda, or its spiritual birthright of spiritual bliss. That's why someone who is on the level of God consciousness, or as we describe, Krishna consciousness, has no problems with the desires which come from the lower levels of the self, that is the mind and the body. Many of our devotees in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness are living proofs for this. I remember one of my friends, he's the son of a multimillionaire. His name is Giriraj Swami. His father did not feel fully satisfied that he had given up material life, and he came one day and offered Giriraj Maharaj an amount of, I believe it was $5 million. This is much in rupees. It can most probably take care of your chapatis for a whole life and more. The father made a condition. You give up this spiritual life and you take this check, and then you live. But because he was in ananda, or in connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is full of, in Sanskrit you say, anandamayo vyasat, full of spiritual bliss, he did not go for this. It is described that the highest material pleasure is sexuality, but the union with God makes this type of pleasure as insignificant as the water contained in the hoof print of a calf in comparison to a mighty ocean. If you come on the platform of Ananda Maya, or the platform where you are related with the source of all pleasure, the source of spiritual pleasure, you will not be tempted by your material desires, which cannot be fulfilled anyways, because they demand more and more, like a fire which increases in dimension. The second tip which you can do, according to Vedic scriptures, is you can transform your material desires by engaging them in the service of Krishna. And I will read to you this verse, and then we'll come to the end, then I will end the class. Kama Krishna Kama Pane Krodha Bhakta Dvishi Jane Lobha Sadhu Sangha Hari Kata Moha Ishta Lobha Bine Mala Krishna Guna Gane Nijukta Karibajata Toha. This is ancient Bengali. Lust I will engage in offering the fruits of my work to Lord Krishna. If you want to work and do something, give it to the Lord. Anger I will direct, anger, towards the enemies of the devotees. Greed I will engage by being greedy to hear the topics of Lord Hari in the association of the saintly devotees. And so on. In this way the poet describes, if he engages his material desires in the service of Krishna, or in connection with God, he will also raise on the spiritual platform. So, my dear students, today we were covering three subjects, and I want to summarize them for you. We were talking about what is the self according to spiritual or Vedic psychology. We were talking about how modern psychology deals with desires which come from the being, which are the driving force of all of our lives. We talked what modern psychology tells us how we can escape neurosis by fulfilling material desires one by one. But we have said that this is a very weak solution, because what we have said, material desires burn like fire, and the more food you give it, the stronger it becomes. You do not give up your endeavors for material life by fulfilling them. You become more and more implicated in them. And then we have given a spiritual solution based on our model that if you can do something by spiritual activities which bring you on the spiritual platform, you'll be spiritually satisfied and a happy person who has no neurosis, who is a self-realized person. I want to thank you very much for listening to this presentation. I have presented in a little time very mighty concepts and very deep things which would explain, maybe which need more explanations. If I have not been able to do my job very well, please forgive me. I was now for one and a half months in the jungle, just meditating and reading. It's my first public appearance, so I may not have explained everything so clearly, because by so much meditation one gets on a, you know, one may lose contact with people. But I wish that all of you take something home from this lecture, that is maybe an idea that this Vedic philosophy deals with the same questions which modern people are thinking about, and offering spiritual solutions. Now, in order to get deeper into spiritual life, you will have to be in contact with Gopinath Prabhu, who organizes lectures like this here at the university. I think at the moment he is giving, you have like a piece of paper where you can write down your name and address and so on. You will explain maybe at the end. I want to stop here. Do you have any questions at this moment? Yes?
This question is not exactly on the body, isn't it?
It is not on the subject matter, but on the Veda Academy. Yes, my work, okay.
Veda Academy, does it work about say application of Vedic principles in business organizations or government organizations? Does it work on those lines?
This is a goal. The Veda Academy has not yet reached this goal. We are at this moment, the Veda Academy is present in many conferences and publishes a lot. How Vedic principles apply to modern men. But it has not yet, so to say, reached into governments. It has touched the hearts of individuals. It's also a very risky thing for governments. They want to be very much separate. I do not think this is even a goal of the Veda Academy. We do not want to take over the governments, we want to take over the hearts of people, really, and then they will do what they do. We consider our work to be like what they do in Germany in the winter time. They put food for the deers in the forest into a place, and everyone takes. I feel spiritual people have to do this. They have to give an open invitation to take knowledge from them, and then they are not really concerned what the people will take from them. This is the beauty of Vedic scripture. Everyone, they say, come take knowledge. It's good for you. Do something out of it. But yes, many people take and do something from it. But we wish to be more, we want to do, there's so much dearth of spiritual knowledge in Europe. It is unimaginable. We have just taken a few drops. Our work has to do much more. Mm-hmm. There was another question. Yeah. It may be easier for everyone if you speak into one of these things. Is it working? Yes.
The question is, Krishna himself is supposed to have hundreds of wives. How can he recommend celibacy, love with that? So I'm confused.
Yes.
As to what is
possible. Krishna married 16,108 wives and built for each of them a separate palace. But his marrying was very extraordinary. It is described that when he was in Dwaraka, his main capital, this capital, when he came out of the 16,108 palaces in the morning, all these forms merged into one, and he went in this one form to the assembly house, the Sudama assembly house, where he had many things to perform, just governmental things, you know. Then when he left the house, he became again 16,108 forms. The reason why I speak like this about Krishna is I want to show you that his body is different from yours or any mortal. His body is a spiritual body, Sat, Chit and Ananda. And these bodies are totally free from the great problem which infests our minds and bodies, which is karma, material desires. Krishna was married to 16,108 wives, but he is described by the greatest brahmachari of his time, Bhishma. Bhishma, you must be knowing from the Mahabharata, he never married. He had this life, this vow of celibacy as the greatest brahmachari because he never felt lust. His body is Sachit Ananda, full of eternity, bliss and knowledge. That means to get satisfaction, he doesn't have to go outside of him like we have. For instance, today, we were meant to eat at 4 o'clock, but of course it was not ready. Of course means the Indian factor came, many things. And now I'm very hungry. I will have to go. I can't be self-contained. I will have to go and somehow do something about this problem. Krishna never has this situation because inside of him or all his desires are already fulfilled. He does not need to go outside of himself. So Krishna's marrying 16,108 wives is not a problem of lust, but it is a manifestation of his divine potency in which he could expand himself in so many forms. Because Krishna has a spiritual body, and his spiritual body cannot be compared to our material bodies. This is how it may be difficult for you to understand. You need to come to the spiritual level and become Tattva Darshinaha, someone who sees the truth with spiritual eyes. See, when we explain spiritual subjects, it's very difficult. Once there was a man, I will give you an example, who had never tasted the jackfruit. I do not know the Indian word for jackfruit. You must be knowing jackfruit. Jackfruit, does it say something?
Yeah,
yes, good. So he came to a friend of his and said, "Can you please explain me a jackfruit? How it tastes?" "No," said the friend, "it's absolutely impossible to explain it. You have to taste it yourself." "Oh," said the man, I don't want to wait until there is a jackfruit on the market. Can't you just somehow give me an idea how it tastes?" So his friend, who knew how a jackfruit tastes, says, "Well, the idea is like this. Pour sugar cane juice through the beard of a Muslim, and then you get the taste of what is jackfruit. Now, how does this taste? Sugarcane juice through the beard of a Muslim. I have no idea, to be very frank, how this tastes." So when we explain Krishna or Krishna's divine nature, we may try our very best to do so, but ultimately he moves in a realm which is called achintya, or inconceivable. Krishna did not marry because of unsatisfied lust. One wife was not enough. He needed 16,108. No. Krishna married to display his wonderful potency, to expand himself in so many forms, imagine, and build so many palaces. Now there was a marine archaeology, that is, the people dive into the ocean, and they found remnants of his town Dwaraka in the Arabic Sea, I think it's called. Is it the Arabic Sea? Yeah, where Dwaraka is. Mm-hmm. And from the few remnants they found, they could see there was a civilization thousands upon thousands of years before modern history begins to count, which was so advanced that it's just inconceivable to us. They saw this was the most advanced civilization which was ever in existence. From the few ruins which they found ruins of Krishna's 16,108 palaces. You cannot see, as long as you think that you are an Indian, that means that you are a body, and as long as you don't know that you are a spiritual soul, you can never understand the Supreme Soul or God. It is not possible. I did my best. Hopefully you are satisfied. Uh-huh. Yes.
Initially, you gave us theory of
I think you should speak inside, then everyone can understand you. So practical these things, yeah.
Initially, you gave us a theory of what the body is, what the Atma is. You described it to us. Then you gave us the Sigmund Freud theory.
Yes.
Of the irrational, and how the personality is.
Yeah.
Thirdly, you mentioned that the best way to counter everything is to give away what you want, or because it's like the fire you described, that as
Yeah.
How do we initiate that in our lives?
Yeah, I was saying if you fulfill material desires, this will be like a fire and it will not work. You will not become satisfied. Just like the fire does not become calm if you pour fuel on it or ghee on it. The